I've been breathing poison for the better part of 20 years as a Savler Chem dog, but this unnamed feral world pushed even my corrupted lungs to their limits. The caustic air ate through everything, fabric, metal, flesh, with the patience of a slow death. My squad moved in loose formation across the corroded wasteland that stretched endlessly before us. Trooper Vask trudged to my left, his lasgun held low but ready, while Merrick covered our right flank with the Vox unit strapped to his back crackling with static interference. Behind them, Jorik and Thelion maintained rear guard, their boots squelching through puddles of chemical runoff that had pooled in the cracked ferrocrete. The two PDF survivors who served as our guides picked their way carefully ahead, their knowledge of this toxic hellscape the only thing keeping us from walking into a sludge pit that would dissolve us before we could scream. The reconnaissance mission had seemed straightforward enough when command briefed us back at the forward operating base. Survey the industrial ruins 30 kilometers northeast, establish potential sites for supply depots, and return with intelligence on the local hazards. Standard work for Chem Dogs, we specialized in environments that would kill regular guard regiments within hours. But 3 days into our march across this poison landscape, I was beginning to understand why the PDF survivors looked so haunted when they volunteered to guide us. The ruins around us told a story of industrial collapse that predated Imperial compliance by centuries. Massive chemical processing plants lay twisted and broken, their pipes and storage tanks split open like infected wounds. Pools of luminescent sludge bubbled and hissed in the shadows between collapsed structures, releasing vapors that made the air shimmer with toxic heat. My skin itched constantly beneath my flak armor, and I could feel the caustic atmosphere working its way through the seals, leaving angry red welts wherever it found purchase. The older PDF guide, a grizzled veteran named Corin, had warned us about the marshlands ahead. His younger companion, barely out of his teens and missing two fingers from chemical burns, kept glancing nervously at the ground as we approached the transition zone where solid ferrocrete gave way to unstable bog. The kid had good reason to be nervous. The marsh stretched for kilometers, a labyrinth of toxic pools and unstable islands of decomposing organic matter that shifted with every tide of chemical runoff from the processing plants. I checked my chronometer and grimaced. We were already behind schedule, and the atmospheric readings on my scanner showed the toxicity levels climbing as we moved deeper into the industrial zone. The rebreather filters would need changing within the next 6 hours, and we only had 2 spare sets per man. Command had assured us the mission would take 4 days maximum, but their intelligence had proven optimistic at best. The ground beneath our feet began to feel different as we entered the marshland proper. What had been solid, if cracked, ferrocrete gave way to a spongy surface that yielded with each step. Chemical runoff had soaked into the substrate over the decades, creating a semi-liquid foundation that supported our weight but felt disturbingly alive beneath our boots. The stench intensified, a cocktail of industrial solvents, decomposing matter, and something else I couldn't identify, something organic and wrong. Vask stumbled as his boot punched through a thin crust of hardened chemicals, his legs sinking knee-deep into the muck beneath. The trooper pulled himself free with a curse that was muffled by his rebreather, but I could see the concern in his eyes. The chemical soup had already begun eating through his boot leather, and dark stains were spreading up his leg where the toxic slurry had splashed. He would need medical attention soon, but we were still hours from our planned extraction point. The seismic tremors started as subtle vibrations that I initially attributed to settling in the unstable ground. The marshland shuddered beneath us with irregular pulses, causing ripples to spread across the pools of chemical waste. At first, these tremors seemed random and harmless, just another hazard in a landscape already trying to kill us. But as we pressed deeper into the bog, the vibrations grew stronger and more frequent. Merrick's Vox unit crackled with interference each time the ground shook, the electromagnetic disturbance playing havoc with our communications equipment. Static burst from the speaker in harsh, discordant patterns that hurt to listen to. I tried raising command twice, but received only white noise in response. The isolation was beginning to weigh on the squad, and I could see the tension in their movements as they navigated the treacherous terrain. The younger PDF guide had grown increasingly agitated as the tremors intensified. He kept stopping to press his ear to the ground, listening for something none of us could hear. His face had gone pale beneath the grime and chemical burns, and his hands shook as he pointed out safe paths through the marsh. Corin tried to calm him, but the older veteran's own nervousness was becoming apparent as he constantly checked his weapon and scanned the horizon for threats that never materialized. A particularly violent tremor knocked Jorik off balance, sending him sprawling into a shallow pool of bubbling chemicals. The trooper scrambled to his feet quickly, but not before the corrosive liquid had begun eating through his uniform and the exposed skin of his hands. The acrid smoke rising from his gear filled the air with a stench that made even my corrupted sinuses burn. I helped him rinse the worst of it off with water from my canteen, but the damage was already done. Angry red burns covered his palms and fingers, and his equipment would need constant monitoring to ensure it didn't fail at a critical moment. The tremors were coming in waves now, each one stronger than the last. The ground cracked and split with each seismic pulse, releasing gouts of noxious vapor that made us all gag despite our rebreathers. The chemical fog that rose from these fissures was different from the ambient atmosphere, thicker, more aggressive, with an oily quality that seemed to cling to our gear and skin. Even my hardened chem dog physiology struggled to process the toxins, leaving me dizzy and nauseous. Thelian had begun showing signs of chemical poisoning despite his rebreather. The trooper stumbled frequently, his coordination deteriorating as the accumulated toxins took their toll. His skin had taken on a grayish pallor, and dark veins were becoming visible beneath the surface where the chemicals had begun to affect his circulation. I knew he needed immediate medical attention, but we were still kilometers from our extraction point with no way to call for support. The marshland seemed to pulse with a life of its own as the tremors continued. Pools of chemical waste sloshed and overflowed their banks, creating new hazards with each seismic event. The unstable ground shifted constantly, forcing us to change course repeatedly as safe paths became impassable quagmires. Our progress slowed to a crawl as we picked our way through an increasingly hostile environment that seemed determined to swallow us whole. The younger PDF guide finally snapped during a particularly violent tremor that opened a fissure directly in front of us. He pressed his hands to his ears and began backing away from the crack in the ground, his eyes wide with terror. The kid was muttering something about things that lived beneath the marsh, creatures that fed on the chemical runoff and grew fat on the bones of anyone foolish enough to venture into their domain. Corin grabbed him roughly and forced him to focus, but I could see the fear in the older veteran's eyes as well. The fissure released a column of vapor so toxic that it overwhelmed our rebreathers instantly. The chemical cloud spread across our position with malevolent purpose, forcing us to retreat to higher ground while our equipment struggled to filter the concentrated poison. My vision blurred as the toxins found their way into my system, and I could taste blood in my mouth where the caustic vapor had burned my throat and lungs. When the vapor finally dissipated, we found ourselves on a small island of relatively solid ground surrounded by pools of bubbling chemical waste. The tremors had intensified to the point where we could barely maintain our footing, and new fissures were opening all around us. The marshland had become a death trap, and our only option was to push forward toward the distant ruins that might offer some shelter from the toxic environment. That was when something massive stirred beneath the largest pool of chemical sludge directly ahead of us. The surface of the toxic soup began to churn and bubble with renewed violence, and the tremors suddenly took on a rhythmic quality that suggested deliberate movement rather than geological activity. The younger PDF guide began screaming warnings about the things that lived in the deep pools, but his words were lost in the chaos as the ground beneath us shuddered with increasing violence. The eruption happened without warning. Something enormous burst from the center of the sludge pool in an explosion of toxic liquid and organic matter. Massive tentacles, each as thick as a man's torso and covered in chemical burns that had healed into grotesque scars, whipped through the air with terrifying speed. The creature's appendages were a sickly yellow-green color, mottled with patches of exposed bone where the caustic environment had eaten away the flesh. Both PDF guides were caught in the creature's initial attack. Corin managed a single shot with his lasgun before a tentacle wrapped around his torso and lifted him into the air. The veteran's scream was cut short as the appendage tightened with bone-crushing force, and I heard his ribs snap like dry twigs. The younger guide tried to run, but another tentacle caught him around the legs and dragged him toward the churning pool of chemical waste. The creature's main body remained hidden beneath the surface of the toxic sludge, but the tentacles that emerged suggested something of enormous size and alien anatomy. The appendages moved with purpose and intelligence, not the random thrashing of a mindless beast. Each tentacle was covered in what looked like chemical burns, but the wounds had healed into thick, scarred tissue that seemed immune to the caustic environment. Corrin's body disappeared beneath the surface of the pool with barely a splash, dragged down by tentacles that showed no sign of releasing their grip. The younger guide's screams echoed across the marshland as he was pulled inexorably toward the same fate, his fingers clawing desperately at the unstable ground as he tried to find purchase. The chemical sludge closed over him with a wet, sucking sound that would haunt my dreams for years to come. The tentacles withdrew as quickly as they had appeared, leaving only ripples on the surface of the toxic pool to mark where our guides had vanished. The sudden silence was more terrifying than the creature's attack, broken only by the sound of our ragged breathing and the constant bubble and hiss of the chemical waste around us. We were alone now in this poisoned wasteland, with no knowledge of the terrain and no way to call for extraction. The silence after the guides disappeared felt heavier than the toxic air pressing against my lungs. I forced myself to move, checking each trooper for injuries while my mind processed what we just witnessed. Vask was shaking, his hands gripping his lasgun so tightly his knuckles had gone white beneath his gloves. Merrick kept adjusting his Vox unit's frequency settings, desperate to establish contact with command, but the static remained unchanged. Jorik flexed his burned hands repeatedly, testing his grip on his weapon despite the obvious pain. Thelion had gone completely still, staring at the spot where the younger guide had vanished as if expecting him to resurface. Without our guides, we were effectively blind in this chemical wasteland. The distant Imperial outpost remained our only viable destination, a cluster of structures barely visible through the perpetual haze that hung over the marshland. The installation looked to be at least 8 kilometers away across terrain that had already proven lethal, but staying here meant certain death. I gathered the squad and explained our situation in terms that left no room for misunderstanding. We would move toward the outpost immediately, maintain tight formation, and trust nothing we saw or heard until we reached Imperial territory. The fog began thickening as we left the site of the attack, rising from the chemical pools in dense columns that reduced visibility to mere meters. The change felt deliberate rather than natural, as if the marshland itself was responding to our presence. The vapor had a different quality than the ambient atmosphere, heavier and more corrosive, with an oily texture that clung to our equipment and made our rebreathers work harder to filter the toxins. Within minutes of entering the thickest concentration, I could feel the chemicals working their way through my gear's seals, leaving burning sensations wherever they touched exposed skin. Vask took point position, his movements careful and deliberate as he tested each step on the unstable ground. The chemical fog swirled around him like a living thing, parting reluctantly as he pushed through it and closing behind him immediately. I followed closely, keeping him within sight while monitoring the rest of the squad. Merrick stayed close to my left shoulder, the Vox unit on his back still crackling with interference that seemed to intensify whenever the fog grew thicker. Jorik and Thelion brought up the rear, their weapons ready despite the limited visibility. The sounds started as we moved deeper into the fog bank. At first, they seemed like normal environmental noise, the bubble and hiss of chemical reactions, the settling of unstable ground, the whisper of toxic vapor moving through the ruins. But gradually, I began to distinguish patterns that suggested something more deliberate. The scraping of claws against metal echoed from multiple directions, sometimes close enough to make us freeze in place, sometimes distant and muffled by the dense atmosphere. Wet slithering noises accompanied the scraping, as if something large was dragging itself across the corroded surfaces of the industrial wreckage. The most disturbing sounds were the screams. They came from deep within the fog, distorted by the chemical haze but unmistakably inhuman. The cries had a quality that made my skin crawl, neither fully animal nor machine but something that existed in the space between. They echoed off the ruined structures around us, making it impossible to determine their source or direction. Each scream was different, some high and keening, others low and guttural, but all carried the same note of alien malevolence that set my teeth on edge. Thelian was the first to show serious signs of psychosis. The trooper had been struggling with chemical poisoning since his exposure to the concentrated toxins earlier, but the fog seemed to accelerate his deterioration. His coordination became increasingly erratic, and he began responding to stimuli that none of the rest of us could perceive. He would stop suddenly and aim his lasgun at empty patches of fog, his finger hovering over the trigger while he tracked targets that existed only in his compromised mind. His breathing became rapid and shallow, and sweat poured down his face despite the cold chemical mist surrounding us. Jorik wasn't far behind in his decline. The burns on his hands had begun festering despite the field dressings I'd applied, and the infection was spreading up his arms in dark lines that were visible beneath his sleeves. The pain was clearly affecting his judgment, and he jumped at every sound the fog carried to us. His weapon handling became sloppy and unpredictable, and I caught him aiming at shadows more than once. The chemicals in the atmosphere were working on all of us, but some men broke faster than others under the constant assault of toxins and stress. Merrick's condition was perhaps the most concerning because his deterioration was subtle. The Vox operator maintained his professional demeanor and continued attempting to establish communications, but his efforts had taken on an obsessive quality that worried me. He would spend long minutes adjusting frequencies and power settings, muttering technical specifications under his breath while the static continued unchanged. His eyes had developed a glassy quality that suggested the neurotoxins were affecting his higher brain functions, and his responses to direct orders came with increasing delays. Even Vask, who had always been the most stable member of the squad, was showing signs of strain. His movements remained controlled and professional, but he had begun talking to himself in whispers that I couldn't quite make out. His head would turn sharply at sounds none of the rest of us could hear, and he would pause for long moments to study empty patches of fog as if something was moving within them. The chemical atmosphere was breaking down our mental defenses as efficiently as it corroded our equipment. The fog continued to thicken as we pushed toward the distant outpost, reducing our world to a sphere of toxic vapor perhaps 3 meters in diameter. The ground beneath our feet became increasingly treacherous, with pools of chemical sludge hidden beneath thin crusts of hardened waste that would collapse without warning. We lost valuable time backtracking from dead ends and impassable hazards, and our progress slowed to a crawl as we picked our way through the maze of industrial debris. The shapes began appearing in the fog as we approached what looked like the remains of a processing facility. At first, they were just suggestions of movement at the edge of our vision, shadows that might have been debris shifting in the chemical breeze. But they became more distinct as our exposure to the neurotoxins continued, taking on forms that triggered our combat instincts despite their obvious impossibility. Humanoid figures would materialize in the mist for brief moments before dissolving back into the chemical haze, leaving us uncertain whether we had seen anything at all. Vex was the trooper who finally snapped under the combined pressure of the toxins and hallucinations. I watched him track something moving through the fog to our right, his lasgun following a target that existed only in his poisoned mind. His breathing became rapid and panicked, and he began muttering warnings about hostiles in the mist. The chemicals had clearly overwhelmed his ability to distinguish between real threats and the phantoms his damaged brain was generating from the swirling patterns in the fog. The first friendly fire incident happened without warning. Vex suddenly opened fire into what appeared to be empty air, his lasgun spitting coherent energy into the chemical mist while he screamed about contacts closing on our position. The Laws bolts illuminated the fog in brief, brilliant flashes that revealed nothing but swirling vapor and industrial debris. I tackled him before he could empty his entire power pack, wrestling the weapon away while he fought against my grip with the desperate strength of a man convinced he was under attack. The damage was already done. The muzzle flashes had destroyed what little night vision we had maintained in the perpetual twilight of the fog, and the sound of weapons fire echoed through the ruins in ways that would attract anything hunting in the chemical wasteland. Worse, the incident had shattered what remained of unit cohesion as the other troopers began questioning their own perceptions. If Vex could mistake empty air for enemy contacts, how could any of us trust what we were seeing in the toxic haze? Merrick's Vox unit chose that moment to emit a burst of static so loud and distorted that it sounded almost like screaming voices. The operator frantically adjusted his controls, but the interference had taken on patterns that seemed deliberately malevolent. Fragments of what might have been human speech emerged from the white noise, though the words were too distorted to understand. The sounds coming from the Vox seemed to respond to our movements, growing louder when we approached certain areas and fading when we changed direction. The psychological pressure was becoming unbearable. Every shadow in the fog might conceal a hostile contact, every sound could signal an approaching threat, and our own senses had become unreliable guides in the chemical wasteland. The neurotoxins were working on all of us differently, but the end result was the same, a gradual erosion of our ability to function as a coherent unit. Trust was dissolving as quickly as the fog dissolved our equipment, leaving each man isolated in his own private hell of hallucinations and paranoia. Thelian had begun responding to threats that existed only in his compromised mind, spinning around to aim his weapon at empty patches of mist while his eyes tracked targets none of the rest of us could see. His condition was deteriorating rapidly, and I knew it was only a matter of time before he followed Vex's example and opened fire on phantoms. The chemicals in the atmosphere were breaking down the barriers between perception and hallucination, leaving us unable to distinguish between real dangers and the products of our poisoned minds. The distant outpost remained our only hope of survival, but it seemed to grow no closer despite our continued movement toward it. The fog played tricks with distance and perspective, making landmarks appear and disappear like mirages in the chemical haze. Structures that looked solid and real from one angle would prove to be empty air when approached from another direction. The marshland itself seemed to be working against us, shifting and changing its layout to trap us in an endless maze of toxic pools and corroded debris. The chemical fog had penetrated our rebreathers completely by the time we reached what remained of the processing facility. I could taste the metallic burn of industrial solvents coating my throat with each labored breath, and the familiar ache behind my eyes told me the neurotoxins were working deeper into my system. My vision had started to blur at the edges, creating phantom movements in my peripheral sight that made me constantly check over my shoulder. The filters in our breathing apparatus had given up any pretense of effectiveness hours ago, leaving us to breathe the concentrated poison directly into our lungs. Vask stumbled against a corroded pipe, his coordination clearly compromised as he struggled to maintain his footing on the uneven ground. The chemicals had eaten through the outer layer of his flak armor, leaving dark stains that spread across the material like infection. His movements had become jerky and unpredictable, and he kept wiping at his eyes as if trying to clear away something that wasn't there. The disciplined trooper I had known for 3 years was disappearing beneath layers of chemical psychosis, replaced by someone whose grip on reality was slipping with each toxic breath. Behind me, Merrick had stopped attempting to establish Vox contact and was now staring at his equipment with the intensity of a man trying to solve an impossible puzzle. His hands moved across the controls in repetitive patterns that served no technical purpose, adjusting frequencies that had already been tested dozens of times. The static emanating from his unit had taken on an almost rhythmic quality, and I caught him nodding along to patterns in the white noise that existed only in his poisoned mind. Sweat poured down his face despite the cold chemical mist, and his pupils had dilated to the point where his eyes looked completely black. The fog around us had grown so thick that I could barely make out Jorik's silhouette 2 meters away. The chemical vapor clung to everything with an oily persistence, coating our weapons and equipment in a residue that ate through metal and fabric with patient determination. My lasgun felt heavier in my hands, not from any physical change, but from the growing uncertainty about whether I could trust my own senses enough to aim it effectively. The toxins were working on my nervous system in ways that made simple motor functions feel foreign and unreliable. Thelian had begun exhibiting the most severe symptoms of chemical-induced psychosis. The trooper would freeze in place for long minutes, his head cocked to one side as if listening to sounds that none of the rest of us could hear. His eyes tracked movement through the fog with mechanical precision, following targets that existed only in his compromised perception. When he did move, his actions were sharp and aggressive, spinning around to cover angles of approach that made no tactical sense given our current position. The burns on his exposed skin had taken on an angry red color that suggested the chemicals were eating through his tissue at the cellular level. The first breakdown in unit discipline happened when Vasque opened fire at what he claimed was a hostile contact moving through the ruins ahead of us. His las bolts cut through the chemical mist in brilliant flashes that illuminated nothing but empty air and corroded machinery. I grabbed his weapon and forced the barrel down, but the damage had already been done. The muzzle flashes had destroyed our limited visibility and announced our position to anything hunting in the toxic wasteland. More importantly, the incident had shattered the last vestiges of trust between the squad members. Jorik immediately spun around and aimed his lasgun at Thelian, convinced that the other trooper was somehow responsible for the phantom contact that had triggered Vasque's response. His burned hands shook as he held his weapon, and I could see the paranoid calculation in his eyes as he tried to determine whether his squad mate had become a threat. The chemicals had eroded his ability to process information rationally, leaving him with only instinct and fear to guide his decisions. His finger hovered over the trigger while he tracked Thelian's movements with the focus of a predator stalking prey. Merrick's deterioration accelerated rapidly after the weapon's fire. The Vox operator began responding to transmissions that weren't there, nodding and adjusting his equipment as if receiving detailed orders from command. He would relay information about enemy positions and movement patterns that existed only in his hallucinations, speaking with the professional tone of a man reporting genuine intelligence. The static from his unit had become so distorted that it sounded like screaming voices, but he seemed to find meaning in the chaos that none of the rest of us could perceive. The fog continued to thicken around us as we pushed deeper into the facility ruins, reducing our world to a claustrophobic bubble of toxic vapor and corroded metal. The chemical mist moved with a life of its own, swirling in patterns that seemed to respond to our presence rather than any natural air currents. Shapes would form in the vapor for brief moments before dissolving back into the haze, leaving us uncertain whether we had witnessed actual movement or merely the products of our poisoned minds. The boundary between perception and hallucination had become so blurred that reality itself felt negotiable. Thelian was the next to snap under the psychological pressure. The trooper suddenly raised his weapon and began tracking something moving through the fog to our left, his movements sharp and aggressive as he followed a target that existed only in his compromised perception. His breathing became rapid and panicked, and he began backing away from whatever he thought he was seeing while keeping his lasgun trained on empty air. The chemicals had clearly overwhelmed his ability to distinguish between real threats and the phantoms his damaged brain was generating from the swirling patterns in the mist. The second friendly fire incident erupted without warning when Jorik mistook Merrick for a hostile contact in the chemical haze. The burned trooper opened fire with a sustained burst that sent Las bolts cutting through the fog where the Vox operator had been standing moments before. Merrick threw himself behind a corroded storage tank, his equipment sparking as stray energy bolts struck the metal near his position. The confusion was complete now, with squad members unable to distinguish between friends and enemies in the toxic environment that had destroyed their ability to think clearly. I tackled Jorik before he could continue firing, wrestling his weapon away while he fought against my grip with the desperate strength of a man convinced he was under attack. The chemicals had eaten through his rational thought processes, leaving him with only paranoid instinct to guide his actions. His burned hands left bloody smears on my armor as he clawed at my equipment, trying to reach his sidearm while screaming about contacts closing on our position. The disciplined soldier I had trained with for months had been replaced by something feral and unpredictable. The psychological breakdown was spreading through the squad like a contagion. Vasque had begun talking to people who weren't there, carrying on detailed conversations with phantom figures that materialized in the chemical fog around him. His responses suggested he was receiving orders from officers who existed only in his hallucinations, and he would nod and acknowledge commands that none of the rest of us could hear. The neurotoxins had created a private reality for each trooper, isolating them in worlds of chemical-induced madness where former comrades became potential threats. Merrick's condition had deteriorated to the point where he was completely unresponsive to external stimuli. The Vox operator sat hunched over his equipment, making constant adjustments to controls that no longer served any functional purpose. His movements had become repetitive and mechanical, following patterns that existed only in his poisoned mind. The static from his unit had grown so loud and distorted that it dominated the acoustic environment, filling the air with white noise that made communication impossible even if any of us had retained the ability to think clearly. The distant Imperial outpost had finally come into clear view through the thinning fog, but what we saw destroyed any hope of finding sanctuary. The installation was clearly abandoned, its structures dark and silent against the toxic landscape. The defensive walls had been breached in multiple places, and the main gate hung open like a wound in the fortifications. Chemical stains covered every surface, and pools of luminescent sludge had collected in the courtyards where rainwater should have gathered. Whatever had happened to the garrison, it had left behind only empty buildings and the promise of another death trap. The facility's external appearance suggested it had been some kind of mining operation rather than a proper military installation. Massive excavation equipment lay scattered around the perimeter, their metal surfaces eaten away by decades of exposure to the toxic atmosphere. Storage tanks and processing units had been arranged in haphazard clusters, their contents long since leaked into the surrounding soil. The entire complex had the look of a place that had been evacuated quickly, with equipment and supplies abandoned where they stood when the decision was made to flee. Thelion had begun firing at shadows in the fog, his las bolts cutting through the chemical mist in random directions while he tracked targets that existed only in his compromised perception. Each muzzle flash illuminated the ruins around us in stark detail, revealing the extent of the chemical damage that had eaten through every surface. The trooper's ammunition counter was dropping rapidly, and I knew he would exhaust his power pack within minutes if his psychotic episode continued. The sound of weapons fire echoed through the abandoned facility, creating acoustic signatures that would attract anything hunting in the toxic wasteland. Jorik had managed to retrieve his sidearm despite my efforts to disarm him, and he was now covering multiple angles of approach with the paranoid intensity of a man surrounded by enemies. His burned hands left bloody prints on his weapon's grip, but he seemed oblivious to the pain as he tracked phantom contacts through the chemical haze. The infection from his chemical burns had spread up his arms in dark lines that were visible beneath his sleeves, and his skin had taken on a grayish pallor that suggested systemic poisoning. His condition was deteriorating rapidly, but the neurotoxins had destroyed his ability to recognize his own physical decline. The fog began to thin as we approached the facility's main entrance, revealing details that had been hidden in the chemical mist. The defensive positions had been constructed hastily, with improvised barricades and firing points that suggested the garrison had been expecting an attack from ground-based threats. Weapon emplacements covered the approaches to the main gate, but their guns had been abandoned in place with ammunition still loaded in their feed mechanisms. Whatever had forced the evacuation, it had happened quickly enough that the defenders hadn't had time to properly secure their equipment. Vask had stopped responding to direct orders and was now operating according to some internal logic that made sense only to his poisoned mind. The trooper moved through the ruins with purposeful determination, following routes that seemed random to external observation, but clearly had meaning within his private reality. He would stop at specific locations and take cover behind debris, as if responding to tactical situations that existed only in his hallucinations. His weapon handling remained professional despite his mental deterioration, suggesting that his military training had become so deeply ingrained that it persisted even as his rational thought processes collapsed. The entrance to the facility revealed evidence of the mining operation's true purpose. Chemical processing equipment had been arranged in complex configurations designed to extract valuable compounds from the toxic soil, but the machinery had been shut down so abruptly that raw materials still sat in the input hoppers. Pools of concentrated chemicals had collected around the processing units, creating hazards that were even more dangerous than the ambient atmosphere. The air inside the facility was thick with industrial vapors that made our compromised rebreathers completely useless. Merrick had begun responding to his hallucinated radio contacts with increasing urgency, relaying tactical information about enemy movements and requesting immediate support from units that existed only in his chemical-induced fantasies. His professional demeanor remained intact despite his complete disconnection from reality, and he continued to follow proper Vox protocol even as he reported on situations that had no basis in fact. The static from his equipment had become so distorted that it sounded like screaming voices, but he seemed to find coherent messages in the chaos that guided his increasingly erratic behavior. The facility's corridors stretched ahead of me like the throat of some massive corpse, lined with chemical stains that had eaten through the metal walls in abstract patterns. I moved alone now through the abandoned mining complex, my footsteps echoing in spaces that had been designed for dozens of workers, but now held only the whisper of toxic vapors and the distant drip of corrosive liquids eating through deteriorating pipes. The others were gone. Vask had wandered off into the fog muttering about orders from phantom officers. Jorik had collapsed from systemic poisoning after emptying his weapon at Shadows, and Thelion had simply stopped moving, his mind finally surrendering to the chemical assault that had been destroying his nervous system for hours. Merrick's body lay crumpled beside his Vox unit in the facility's entrance chamber, his equipment still crackling with static interference despite his death. The chemicals had finally overwhelmed his system during one of his hallucinated conversations with Command, leaving him slumped over the controls he had adjusted obsessively in his final hours. I had checked his pulse out of habit, but the grayish pallor of his skin and the chemical burns covering his exposed flesh made it clear that the toxic atmosphere had claimed another victim. His Vox unit continued broadcasting white noise into the empty corridors, the sound echoing off corroded walls in patterns that almost resembled human speech. The deeper sections of the facility revealed the true scope of the mining operation that had once functioned here. Massive excavation equipment sat abandoned in underground chambers that stretched far beneath the surface, their metal surfaces eaten away by decades of exposure to concentrated chemicals. The machinery had been designed to extract valuable compounds from the toxic soil, but something had gone wrong with the process. Storage tanks had ruptured, spilling their contents across the floor in pools of luminescent sludge that released vapors so concentrated they were visible as shimmering distortions in the air. I found the communications center on the third level down, its equipment still powered despite the facility's apparent abandonment. The Vox array was more sophisticated than anything our squad had carried, with transmission capabilities that should have been able to reach Imperial forces across the entire system. My hands shook as I worked the controls, trying to establish contact with any Imperial installation that might be monitoring the frequencies. The chemical exposure had affected my fine motor control, making simple tasks feel clumsy and uncertain, but I managed to activate the primary transmitter and begin cycling through emergency channels. The static that emerged from the speakers was unlike anything I had encountered in 20 years of military service. The white noise contained patterns that seemed almost deliberate, with variations in tone and rhythm that suggested structure rather than random interference. Fragments of what might have been human voices emerged from the chaos, though the words were too distorted to understand. The electromagnetic disturbance seemed to respond to my presence, growing louder when I moved closer to the equipment and fading when I stepped away from the control console. I spent hours trying different frequency combinations and power settings, but the interference remained constant across all channels. The facility's location in the heart of the chemical wasteland created a dead zone for conventional communications, and the toxic atmosphere itself seemed to generate electromagnetic disturbance that overwhelmed any attempt to establish contact. My repeated calls for extraction went unanswered, lost in the white noise that filled the airwaves with its malevolent static. The isolation was complete now, cutting me off from any hope of Imperial support or rescue. The chemical fog had followed me into the facility, seeping through ventilation systems and gaps in the structure's compromised seals. The toxic vapor moved through the corridors like a living thing, pooling in low areas and flowing around obstacles with purposeful determination. My rebreather had given up any pretense of filtering the concentrated poison, leaving me to breathe the industrial atmosphere directly into my lungs. The metallic taste of solvents coated my throat, and the familiar burn behind my eyes told me the neurotoxins were working deeper into my system with each labored breath. The hallucinations began as subtle distortions at the edge of my vision, shadows that might have been equipment shifting in the chemical breeze. But they became more distinct as my exposure to the neurotoxins continued, taking on forms that triggered combat instincts despite their obvious impossibility. Humanoid figures would materialize in the mist for brief moments before dissolving back into the toxic haze, leaving me uncertain whether I had seen anything at all. The boundary between perception and fantasy had become so blurred that reality itself felt negotiable. My exploration of the facility's lower levels revealed the source of the seismic tremors that had plagued our march through the marshland. The mining operation had excavated far deeper than any surface survey had indicated, creating a network of tunnels and chambers that extended hundreds of meters into the toxic substrate. The excavation equipment had been abandoned in place when the operation was terminated, leaving massive boring machines and chemical extractors scattered throughout the underground complex like the bones of some industrial graveyard. The deepest chambers showed evidence of discoveries that the mining operation had never been designed to handle. Strange formations in the rock walls suggested the presence of organic compounds that had no place in a geological survey, and the chemical composition of the extracted materials had clearly changed as the excavation progressed deeper. The storage tanks in these areas contained substances that glowed with their own internal light, casting eerie shadows on walls that had been eaten away by decades of exposure to compounds that should not have existed in nature. The tremors I had attributed to geological instability were actually coming from something massive moving through the deepest sections of the excavated tunnels. The rhythmic vibrations had a deliberate quality that suggested intelligence rather than random seismic activity, and they seemed to respond to surface movement in ways that indicated awareness of activity above. Whatever the mining operation had disturbed in the depths beneath the facility, it had been growing and changing in the toxic environment for decades, feeding on the chemical compounds that had been extracted from the surrounding soil. The creature's presence explained the facility's hasty abandonment and the terror I had seen in our PDF guide's eyes when they spoke of things that lived beneath the marshland. The mining operation had excavated too deep and discovered something that had been sleeping in the toxic substrate, something that had adapted to the chemical environment in ways that made it perfectly suited to hunt in the poisoned wasteland above. The tremors were its movement through the tunnel system, following vibrations and chemical traces to locate prey on the surface. My damaged mind struggled to process the implications as the neurotoxins continued their assault on my nervous system. The fog itself was not just a product of the chemical atmosphere, but something more complex and purposeful. The toxic vapor moved with intention, seeking out human nervous tissue and working its way into brain chemistry with the efficiency of a biological weapon. The paranoia and aggression it induced were not side effects, but deliberate mechanisms designed to turn victims against each other, weakening them for whatever predator had evolved to hunt in this environment. The realization came with a clarity that cut through the chemical haze clouding my thoughts. The fog was alive, a symbiotic organism that had evolved alongside the creature in the depths, serving as both hunting tool and food preparation system. It would drive surface dwellers insane with induced paranoia, causing them to exhaust themselves fighting phantom enemies and turning against their companions. The weakened survivors would then be easy prey for the massive predator that had been following our movements since we entered the marshland. The sounds I had been hearing throughout our journey across the toxic wasteland were not random environmental noise, but the creature's approach through the underground tunnel system. It had been tracking us from below, following the vibrations of our movement and the chemical signatures of our equipment. The attacks on our guides had been reconnaissance, testing our capabilities and reactions while the fog worked to break down our mental defenses. Now it was moving through the facility's deepest levels, drawn by the electromagnetic emissions from the Vox equipment and the scent of human flesh that had been marinating in chemical toxins for hours. The facility's structural damage became more apparent as I explored the lower levels, with support beams corroded to the point of failure and load-bearing walls eaten away by decades of chemical exposure. The mining operations excavations had undermined the foundation's integrity, creating weak points throughout the complex that would collapse under minimal stress. The entire installation was a death trap waiting for the right trigger to bring it down in a cascade of failing supports and collapsing chambers. The creature finally revealed itself as I reached the deepest accessible level of the facility. The thing that emerged from the excavated tunnels was beyond anything my military training had prepared me to face, a mass of chemically mutated flesh that had adapted to thrive in the toxic environment. Its body was easily 20 meters long, a writhing collection of appendages and sensory organs that had evolved to hunt in complete darkness. The chemical burns that covered its surface had healed into thick, armored plates that made it immune to the caustic atmosphere that would kill any normal organism within minutes. The creature was completely blind, its eyes having atrophied during decades of existence in the lightless depths beneath the marshland. Instead, it relied on vibrations and chemical detection to locate prey, using specialized organs that could track the electromagnetic signatures of Imperial equipment and the unique scent of human nervous tissue. Its movements were fluid and purposeful despite its massive size, flowing through the facility's corridors with the grace of something perfectly adapted to its environment. My lasgun was useless against the creature's armored hide, the coherent energy bolts dissipating harmlessly against plates of scar tissue that had been hardened by decades of chemical exposure. The thing moved toward me with inexorable patience, drawn by the electromagnetic emissions from my equipment and the scent of toxins that had soaked into my flesh. Its appendages tested the air around me, sampling chemical traces with organs that could detect the specific compounds produced by human fear and desperation. The fog had completed its work on my nervous system, leaving me balanced on the edge between lucidity and complete psychotic breakdown. The paranoia and aggression it induced were fighting against my remaining rational thought processes, creating a mental battlefield where sanity and madness struggled for control. I could feel my grip on reality slipping with each toxic breath, but enough clarity remained for me to understand what was happening and make one final choice about how my story would end. The facility's structural weakness offered a solution that appealed to the tactical training that had survived my chemical-induced madness. The support columns in this section were corroded to the point where a single explosive charge would bring down the entire level, trapping the creature in a collapse that would seal the tunnel system permanently. My last frag grenade had enough explosive power to trigger the cascade failure, but using it would mean certain death as the facility came down around me. The creature sensed my intentions and began moving faster, its massive bulk flowing through the corridors with increasing urgency as it closed the distance between us. Its chemical detection organs had identified the explosive compounds in my grenade, and some primitive intelligence recognized the threat they represented to its survival. The thing's appendages reached toward me with desperate hunger, seeking to claim its prey before I could deny it the meal it had been tracking for hours. I pulled the pin from my final frag grenade and held it against the most heavily corroded support column in the chamber, feeling the creature's presence filling the space behind me as it surged forward with alien determination. The explosive device felt heavy in my hands, its weight representing the choice between becoming food for an abomination and dying on my own terms. The chemical fog swirled around me like a living thing, trying one last time to break my resolve and turn me into another victim of its symbiotic partner. The grenade's detonation brought down the facility's support structure in a cascade of failing metal and collapsing stone that sealed the creature's fate along with my own. The sound of the explosion echoed through the underground chambers as tons of debris filled the tunnel system, trapping the predator beneath layers of rubble that would take decades to clear. My last coherent thought was satisfaction that the thing would starve in its buried lair, denied the human prey it had evolved to hunt in the chemical wasteland above. The toxic fog dissipated as the facility collapsed, its symbiotic relationship with the buried creature severed by the tons of debris that now separated them. The marshland above would remain poisonous and hostile, but without its living predator and the fog that served as its hunting tool, future Imperial forces might have a chance to establish a foothold in the chemical wasteland. My death had purchased that possibility with the last rational decision of a mind destroyed by decades of exposure to the galaxy's most toxic environments. The Emperor's mercy came in the form of crushing stone and twisted metal, a death that was swift and clean compared to the slow dissolution that awaited anyone consumed by the creature's alien hunger. In my final moments, I felt grateful for the training that had allowed me to choose how my story ended, even as the chemical madness claimed the last fragments of my sanity. The chem dogs had always known we were expendable, but at least I had made my death count for something more than feeding the nightmares that lurked beneath the poisoned soil of forgotten worlds.